We're holding on your Ches Amud Aleph, the seventh line. We learned yesterday about, so we had like this. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had said that when a person does one of the avoidas of a mincha, or for that matter a korban, is the same kind of thing, having in mind to eat, even if he has in mind to eat the things that are meant to be burnt or vice versa, then nevertheless the korban can be pigle. The Chumrat said only if he has in mind to eat what's meant to be eaten and burnt what's meant to be burnt, or burn what's meant to be burnt, then it will become pigle. So we wrote a brisa where we were discussing about what exactly are Rabbi Eliezer's and the Chachamim's opinions about various possibilities within that. We had where he has in mind to drink the blood tomorrow or burn the flesh tomorrow or eat the emorim tomorrow. There Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible, as he says in the Mishnah. If he has in mind to leave over the blood and not actually sprinkle it, and then neither sprinkle nor drink it, but just leave it over, then he said Rabbi Yehuda had also said it's possible, and Rabbi Lazar had said that Rabbi Eliezer also says they are posel l'cham machshirin. The Gemara had ended up saying at this point that there were three different opinions within this brisa, what the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are in the respective cases. The Tanakhama of that brisa would say that if he just had in mind to leave over the blood, everybody agrees it's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda holds that no, if he has in mind to leave it over, everybody will agree it's possible, both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, and that if he has in mind to eat the emorim or drink the blood or what have you, then Rabbi Eliezer, then as we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer will say it's possible and the Chum will say it's kosher. And then we have Rabbi Lazar saying that Rabbi Eliezer would say that in all those cases, always Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible, and the Chum says it's kosher, even in the case of leaving over the blood. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, "V'savar of Yehuda la'aniach midyomer l'machar de'vehak apostle." So you're telling me then that the Yehuda holds that everybody, both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, would agree that if he has in mind during one of the avoidas of a korban to leave over some of the blood tomorrow and not sprinkle and not eat it. You're saying that Rabbi Yehuda holds different hakel posel, that everybody, both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, would agree that the korban is posel, maybe not pigel, fine, because a pigel he has to have in mind to offer it, and he's not doing that, but nevertheless, we said that it would be posel. In particular, we said at the top of the Amud that Rabbi Yehuda had said, Rabbi Yehuda had figured that if you say it's fine, if he has in mind to leave over the blood, so tomorrow, what happens if he ends up leaving all the blood over? Then it would be possible because then there's no sprinkling in the blood and it's going to become possible by Shkiyas HaChama. So does Rabbi Yehuda in fact hold that even the Chachamim agree it's possible in that case? But Hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rebbe, Shahalachti the Matzis Midosai Eitzel Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua. Rebbe says that when I went to squeeze out and to get into the details of my midos, meaning my learning Torah, by Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua. In other words, Rashi says that Rebbe by that time had learned lots of Torah. This is long before he became a Nasi. The Pashtus, this is when he's still the son of the, this is when he's still a Talmud, but still, he had learned a lot of Torah at that point. But now he wants, Rashi says, to know Mitzui Talmidai, to know like the squeezing out, to know like the last little bits of my learning that I don't know yet, and to ask Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua my sphakis, my doubts. So he wants to do that. He knows already a lot of Torah. He wants to learn from Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua more details that he didn't know yet. So when I went to do that, the Amila, or another version is that Rebbe phrased it, Lamatis Midos Sub Shah Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua, that I wanted to squeeze out and learn all of his midos to find out in what are the areas in which Rabbi Lozer knows more Torah than I do so that I can learn from him. So it comes out the same thing either way. Basically, he wants to learn the finer details of Torah from Rabbi Lozer Ben Shamua, but there's different ways of phrasing it. Rabbi Gershon gives an explanation. Lamatzis midosav would mean, particularly, to learn masechtas that I hadn't learned yet. The word midos in Aramaic, the word mechilta, means a measure. The Medrash Halacha on Shmos is so called because it measures out all the words in the pasuk and determines what they're coming to teach us in terms of halacha. And a Meshechta also is sometimes called Mechilta for the same reason. So therefore, the Matzis Midosai, taking the word Midos and translating it into the equivalent Mechilta, and then kind of retranslating it into Meshechta, comes out that he wants to get the remaining Meshechtas, the remaining details of Torah that he hadn't learned yet. There is, by the way, a Gemara in Yevamos where Rebbe says that one time I went to learn by Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, and his Talmidim wouldn't allow me to sit there and learn very much. But apparently this was some time later, after Rebbe was already an accomplished Talmid Chacham in his own right, so then he came and learned Torah, and then he came and learned lots of Torah by Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. Anyway, says Rebbe, Motsasi Yosef HaBavli Yosef Lefanav. I found that Yosef HaBavli was sitting in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, the Talmid. Vayachoviv loy b'Yosef. And Yosef HaBavli, the Talmud, was very dear, to Rabbi Elazar, ad la'achas, until one. Now, what does that mean? There's a few different explanations. Rashi says that ad la'achas means they were talking in halacha, the Rebbe and the Talmud, until they reached one particular halacha, and that's going to be the subject of the following story. Rashi's second explanation is v'hayachoviv. Means Yosef HaBavli loved every teaching of Rabbi Elazar until there came one time when we see in the story he seemed to show his disapproval of a particular halacha that Rabbi Elazar taught. So those are two explanations in Rashi. Tosfos brings another explanation, which is that Tosfos brings two other explanations. Adwa Achas can mean very, very much. In Lashon Kodesh, in Tanakh, you would say ad ma'oid. In many places in Tanakh where that phrase is used, ma'oid, then Targum, Untalos, or Yonasan, as the case may be, translated as lachda, which literally means 2-1. So again, by translating, so Tosfos brings from Rabbi Nissen Goyen, and Shitram Kubratis brings what Rabbeinu Nissen says in greater detail. The gist of it is that, yeah, this is kind of a Lashon Chochma, to take the word and translate it and then retranslate it, and you have another way of expressing the same thing. So instead of saying ad ma'oid, you would translate that into Aramaic, which results in ad lachda, and then translate that back into Hebrew. Lachda literally means 2-1, so you would come out with ad la'achas. And then Tosfos says another explanation. He loved him with a deep soul love. One of the names for the soul is the Yechidah. One of the names for the Neshama is the Yechidah. So ad la'achas would mean he loved him to the point of his Yechidah. Anyway, so Yosef HaBavli was there, and he and Rabbi Elazar are talking in Torah, says Rebbe. Omer Loi, so Yosef HaBavli asks Rabbi Elazar, Rebbe, Hashoichet es hazevach la'amich midomi lamachar, if a person shechts a korban, having in mind to leave over from the blood tomorrow, mahu, what would be the din? Now, so that's the thing. So we said before, according to the way we understood the Braisa before, there were three different opinions, there were a few different opinions, what the earlier Tanoim would hold on the subject. The Tanakhama of the previous Braisa had said that everybody would agree it's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda held, we said, that everybody would agree it's possible. And Rabbi Elazar, the same Rabbi Elazar, at Ben Shammua, as in our story, says that it's Machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. So what is the din if a person has in mind to leave over the blood for the next day? Mahu, what would be the din? Is the Korban possible or not? Omalai Kosher, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, which is when we had Rabbi Elazar unspecified as a Tana, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. So it's the same Rabbi Elazar as our story. So Omalai Kosher, so Rabbi Elazar tells him it's Kosher. That was in the morning. In fact, on the side he would bring that the Gir says it's supposed to be Shachris Omalai Kosher. In the morning, when he asked him the question, he told him it's Kosher. And then, Arvis Omalai Kosher. Well, if you have it in the Gemara over here, you just have it in a different order. So he said to him Kosher. Arvis Omalai Kosher. He asked him in the evening, and again he said it's Kosher. Shachris Omalai Kosher. In the morning, he asked the same question and said it's Kosher. Sarayim Omalai Kosher. In the middle of the day, he asked him yet again, and Rabbi Elazar again said it's Kosher. Mincha time, on the side of here again it says that a different girsa would have them in the other way around, that he asked them in the morning, in the middle of the day, in mincha time, and ma'ariv. In any case, he asked him another time, and Omaloi, and Rabbi Elazar tells him, kosher, elashalur Rabbi Eliezer posel. It is kosher, however, you should know that Rabbi Eliezer says that it's posel. Sarv upon of Yosef HaBavli. Yosef HaBavli's face lit up. So And so now he, for the first time, it seems like now he heard something that he had been expecting before and was like, until now, almost like disappointed not to hear. So Rabbi Elazar tells him, Yosef, does it seem to you that maybe we haven't made our teachings correct until now? In other words, all this time, you've been asking me again and again, and I told you it's kosher. Apparently you don't agree with that. So now, when I finally told you there's an opinion that it's kosher, then your face lit up. So does that mean you don't agree with the opinion that it's kosher? So Yosef says, Rebbe, Cain. Rebbe, yes, I agree that what you said was correct. But the reason why it bothered me until now, and why I was asking again and again, and why when you told me Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, my face lit up. The reason is because Rabbi Yehuda had taught me that in fact it's possible. Now, says Yosef HaBabri, I had gone around, I had circulated around among all of Rabbi Yehuda's Talmidim, and I was looking for another colleague who would say that he had heard the same thing from Rabbi Yehuda. And I couldn't find. Nobody seemed to have heard that Rabbi Yehuda saying that except me. So I didn't know. Maybe I forgot. Maybe I'm misunderstanding or something. The action of Shishanisali Possel, now that you taught me that there is an opinion that says Possel, now that you taught me Possel, you've restored to me my lost thing. Now I realize it wasn't that I misunderstood or it wasn't that I forgot or anything like that. So now I understand. Now I have a basis for saying that what I remember hearing from Rabbi Yehuda is in fact correct. The Braisa continues. Rebbe, and again, Rebbe is saw all of this as a Talmud himself and is reporting this story. Zogu ein of dmois to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua's eyes start streaming tears. Omar, he says, Ashreichem Tamid Chachamin, how fortunate are you, Tamid Chachamin, should give a Torah chaviv and aleichem be Yosef, that words of Torah are so precious to you, that you have over here, a Talmud, his face lights up when he hears this one particular din. And Rabbi Elazar applied to Yosef HaBavli the pasuk Mo Ahavti Sarasecha, how much I love your Torah. Kol Hayom Yisichasi V'Gomer, all day long. It's the subject of my talk. So in other words, that Talmud Chacham like Yosef HaBavli is so eager to make sure he knows every tiny bit of Torah, and that he hasn't misunderstood or forgotten anything, and that it bothered him, and he was asking the whole day, and until now he was disappointed, and all of a sudden his face lit up. Then Yehoyada says the vote on it, what's Shadiv Torah Chaviv and Aleichem be Yosef? He says like this, you know, it comes to money, let's say. A person receives a large amount of money, of course they're going to be very happy. But you receive, let's say, a dollar. Big deal, you don't make a big deal out of it. Your face is not going to light up because of it. But Yosef HaBavli, he was one particular halacha, and that causes his face to light up. So therefore, B'Yosef, that the Talmud Chachamim, loved the Torah very, very much. Even that the tiniest little bit of it is important to them. And he says, that's why does Rabbi Elazar use the pasuk Mo Ahavti Sarasecha? There are many, if you're talking about the happiness that a person gets from Torah, there's many other pasukim that express idea to, and many other psukim that talk about the joy in learning Torah. But he says, because the word ma, or ma, in the pasuk, whatever, ma means what? It also means like, it also sometimes means like an insubstantial, insignificant thing. So David is saying, the ma ahabti sarasecha, even the ma, even the tiniest little, seemingly unimportant details in Torah, ahabti, I love them. As we see that Yosef HaBavli, this one little detail within the halachas of korbanos bothered him so much until he finally got the answer. And so Rabbi Elazar explains, I'll tell you how come Rabbi Yehuda taught you that it's possible. Rabbi Yehuda is the son of Rabbi Loi. The Tana Rabbi Yehuda throughout Shas, whenever we have Rabbi Yehuda unspecified, it's Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Loi. So he's the Talmud of Rabbi Loi. Rabbi Loi, Talmud is Rabbi Eliezer. And in turn, Rabbi Loi, the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, Lefichach, Shana Lacham, Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda taught you the way Rabbi Eliezer learns, that Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible. So that's why he taught it to you. So now I'm clarifying to you, it's not the universally held opinion. It's only the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. We don't necessarily hold like it in halacha. But and in fact, Rashi says even Rabbi Yehuda, when he taught you it, he just because it was his father's Rebbe, it was very precious to him that opinion, and therefore he taught it to you as though that's how it is, and there's no other opinion. But in fact, you should be aware that there is another opinion on the subject. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Sukkah, for example, that tells about Rabbi Loi going to visit his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer, on a Yom Tov. So we see that Rabbi Loi was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. We find, by the way, in a few places in Shas, there are places where Rabbi Yehuda himself describes how when he was a boy, he was in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was a senior Rav, he was his father's Rebbe, but there were times Rabbi Yehuda mentions things that happened when he was a child in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer. The Pashtus, his father, being one of Rabbi Eliezer's Talmidim, had taken his son Yehuda to see his Rebbe sometimes. So that's the story. So now let's analyze that and figure out what Rabbi Yehuda actually holds as far as what the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda hold, versus Rabbi Eliezer hold. Again, we said at the top of the Amud that where Lahaniach, which is this exact case that Yosef Ababli was asking about, we said at the top of the Amud that Rabbi Yehuda holds that everybody, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, agree that it's possible. Now, the Isakadat, Divrei Hakol Posel, now if, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda had taught, if in fact Rabbi Yehuda had taught Yosef Abadli that everybody says it's possible, if he had taught like that, my hechzar to the Avedosi, then what would Yosef Abadli mean? Oh, you restored me my lost object. What he restored? You push the Kamalei. Rabbi Lazar is telling him that it's not the same thing, that there is in fact machlokas on it. So Yosef Abadli is concerned about the fact that he learned from Rabbi Yehuda Possel. If Rabbi Yehuda had taught him that everybody agrees it's possible, then if Rabbi Lazar tells him that there's only one opinion that Rabbi Eliezer, namely Rabbi Eliezer, that says it's possible, that still wouldn't appease Yosef Abadli. He would still be saying, well, wait a minute, Rabbi Yehuda told me generically that it's possible. He didn't tell me there's different opinions on the subject, or not just he didn't tell me generically, but he told me explicitly Divrei Hakol Possel. So if Yehuda, in fact, holds Divrei Hakol Possel, and he taught Yosef Abadli that way, then how would he be appeased by knowing, you know what, that's not Divrei Hakol, it's only Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? So the Gemara says, okay, well then Elamai, so what are you going to say? Rabbi Yehuda taught him kosher, Rabbi Eliezer posel asniyeh. So what, you're going to tell me that he actually taught him that it's kosher, but Rabbi Eliezer says it's posel? So then still fine, then that would explain, so Yosef Abadli didn't hear from any other of the other Talmidim that Rabbi Yehuda had ever said there's opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Now fine, when he hears it from Rabbi Lazar, then that makes him feel better. But then you have to ask, what do you mean? Why would Rabbi Lazar mention? You know why Rabbi Yehuda taught you this way is because he's a Talmud. Because he's a son of Rabbi Loi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. Implying, in other words, that Rabbi Lazar, that implies, in other words, that so he's only teaching it because he likes it and not because the halacha is like that. The fact is, according to Rabbi Lazar, we said before that Rabbi Lazar himself is saying that there's a machlokas on that. So then in that case, why wouldn't he find it acceptable? So in other words, if Rabbi Yehuda had taught Yosef Abadli that there's machlokas, then Rabbi Lazar doesn't need to tell him. In other words, fine, there's a machlokas, but then Rabbi Lazar doesn't need to clarify. You know why Rabbi Yehuda taught you Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is because his father was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. If it's a machlokas, then a lot of times you have the words of the yochid, even though the halacha is not like that. The fact that Rabbi Lazar says, you know, I want to explain to you a chiddush why Rabbi Yehuda taught you that way because his father was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer implies that Rabbi Yehuda himself, in fact, holds that there isn't a machlokas, but that's the question. So what does Rabbi Yehuda hold? If you're going to say he holds that all of them, that everybody holds it's possible, and he taught Yosef Abadli that, well, then Yosef Abadli is not going to be appeased by saying it's not Divrei Hakol, it's only the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And if he actually taught him there is a machlokas, then Rabbi Lazar has no reason to explain why Rabbi Yehuda taught him that opinion, because it's reasonable enough. You teach all the opinions on the subject. Rather, the answer is going to be Rabbi Yehuda did in fact teach Yosef Abadli the word Divrei Hakol Possel. Which then that would explain, at the top of the Amud, we said that Rabbi Yehuda does in fact hold that everybody agrees it's possible, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. So now then the question was, then we asked them in that case, then why does Yosef Ababi feel so good about it? The fact is, even now, after hearing from Rav Elazar, he knows it's not Divrei Hakel, he knows it's only the opinion of Rav Eliezer. So why would that help? Why would that make him feel better? What do you mean you restored me my lost object? That at any rate, he told him that there is some opinion that says that it's possible. So in other words, it doesn't bother Yosef Ababli that he learned Divrei Hakel Pasul, and now he's learning it's not Divrei Hakel, it's only according to Rabbi Eliezer. Fine, we're saying Rabbi Yehuda is entitled to hold that way. Rabbi Yehuda is entitled to hold that, in fact, even the Chachamim would agree it's Pasul. But now, when he hears, in fact, it's not, fine. But at least until now, I didn't even know there was anybody who says it's Pasul. Until now, I didn't know there was anybody who holds differently. So now you're telling me that there is a, that there now you're telling me that fine, it's not the universally held opinion that it's possible, but at least that there is such an opinion, where until now I was asking among Rabbi Yehuda's Talmidim and all of them were telling me it's kosher. So therefore we can leave off after all that Rabbi Yehuda does hold that everybody, both Rabbi Yezu and the Chachamim, agree that it's possible. In this case of Lahaniach, and he taught it to Yosef Ababli that way as Divrei Hakel Pasul because his father was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. So we can leave it that way. That's how Rabbi Yehuda holds. Now the reason why now the Gemara had all brought this had brought this in was a continuation of the discussion on Yud Zayin Amud Beis when Rabbi Eliezer says in the Mishnah that if he has in mind to eat what was meant to be burnt or vice versa and the korban is posel, does he hold it's pigul daraisa or does he hold it's posel or does he hold that it's only posel derabanan? So the Gemara had tried to say, so the Gemara had firstly brought a pasuk for Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, and then the Gemara said, but if it's a pasuk, then it should mean that he holds that it's pigul daraisa in the case of chutz mano. And we said that, so the Gemara had tried to say on Yud Zayin Amud Beis that there's Machlokas Tanoim, there is an opinion that holds that it's Pasul Daraisa, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, and another one, Pigul Daraisa, and another one that's Pasul only Dirabanan. It comes out from this whole discussion that no, in fact, there is no Machlokas Tanoim over it. In the end, it seems that everybody agrees, there is a difference of opinion, what Rabbi Eliezer himself agrees. But in any case, it comes out from here that there's nobody who actually says that Rabbi Eliezer would say that's pigul daraisa. The most they would say is it's posel derabanan. Tosfos points out that there is a Gemara in Zvachim where Shmuel says that according to Rabbi Eliezer, he would in fact be chayav paras. So fine, Shmuel does not have to agree, but the maskana of the Gemara over here, he can learn Rabbi Eliezer differently and say that Rabbi Eliezer would in fact hold that it's apostle and therefore pigul daraisa. And also Tosfos goes on to discuss another possibility of how to explain it, that maybe Shmuel would hold. We said before there are three different opinions in the Braisa about Lahaniach, but that would only be as far as that. When it comes to having in mind to eat from the burnt parts or burn the eaten parts, then Shmuel could hold that not only Rabbi Eliezer, but even the Tanakama hold that there is kares in that case. In all Gemara over here, we end up saying that Rabbi Eliezer, that everybody agrees, even if they hold that Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible by Lahaniach, would be only possible, not pigul, but when he has in mind to eat the parts that are to be burned or vice versa, that Rabbi Eliezer says it's possible, does he mean possible only or actually pigul? From all Gemara over here, it comes out that everybody agrees that he says it's only possible. Based on that Gemara and Zvachin, Shmuel may learn Rabbi Eliezer differently. The halacha, in any case, is like the Chachamim. So as far as bottom line halacha, only if he has in mind to eat what's meant to be eaten or burn what's meant to be burned, only then is it considered table. Okay. Now we're going to start talking about the specific, now we're basically done with the concept of pigul for now, and now we're going to start talking about the actual procedure of the korban mincha in terms of who can do which of those procedures, and then on the korban will or won't be kosher. The procedure is basically as follows. Most menachos contain oil. Most menachos are flour and oil. So you start by doing like this. You start by putting oil in the keli, You start out altogether with a normal mincha consists of one isarin of flour and one lug of oil. We'll talk about later in the Masechta. It's possible to bring a larger mincha, but for right now, let's talk about just the simplest kind of mincha, which is one isarin of flour and one lug of oil. You start by putting some of the oil into the keli. Then you put in the flour. Then you pour more oil on top of the flour. Later in the Masechta, the Gemara learns from Sukkim that you need these three stages. You need three stages altogether of putting in oil. So oil in the keli first, then flour. You mix it together. If it's a mincha solus, if it's a mincha of just flour, then at that point you pour the oil over it a third time, and then you put on the levaina. If it's going to be a baked or fried mincha, we'll learn later in the Masechta, then you use the sarin of oil for frying it. But if it's a baked mincha, then what you do is you bake it. Depending on the particular kind, you smear it with oil afterwards or not. Either you pour on or smear on the remaining oil on it. Then you have the mincha sota and the mincha sa'omer have to be waved. Then the next thing you do is you take the kohen takes the keli and touches it to the southwest corner of the mizbeach. We've learned about this in Zvach, and we'll learn again in the next couple of dafim why dafka that corner. So then after that, he takes the koimetz, puts the koimetz in a kli shoris, takes the lavona, takes the koimetz together with the lavona from his deach, walks it over there, salts it, and burns it. Those are all the steps of a mincha. There are different variations depending on specific menachas, but that's the general overview. So now the Mishnah is going to go through a number of these things if they were not done. And we're going to talk about in the Gemara, we're going to have a longer list of things. So the Mishnah says, lo yotzak. So Rashi explains, lo yotzak over here means he didn't do that last pouring. So let's say he put the oil in the keli, and then he put the flour. Or he didn't do the third pouring, that is, he did the first pouring, which is into the keli, into the bare keli, then the second pouring afterwards to mix together with the flour, but he didn't do the third pouring with the remainder of the oil. Instead, let's say he used all the oil on the second, and used all the remaining oil the second time. So if he did that, v'lo bolal, or if he didn't mix the flour and, if he didn't mix the flour and oil, that would mean that he didn't even put the second application of oil. Rashi points out that if he has to put in the entire isarin of oil, otherwise the mincha is possible. We learned that in the first parak. But loy yotzak would mean he didn't do the third application. Loy bolal means he didn't do the second, which is what you need in order to mix it. So let's say, so he just put in all the oil to begin with and then put in the flour. If he didn't break the mincha into pieces, so when it comes to a baked mincha, then you have to break it into pieces. Rashi points out that this is true of actually all baked and fried menachas. Each one of them, you take the isarin of flour, divide it into 10 chalos, and then you're supposed to break them into pieces, and then you take the kmitza. So if he has to break some of them because he has to break enough of them in order to be able to take a kohenetz. But the koimetz, as we learned in the first parak, has to be very exact. None of it, no extra, no less. So there's no way to do that unless he first breaks up, and so the first breaks it up into pieces. But let's say he only broke up a small amount of the baked or fried chalas, and then he left the rest unbroken up, and then took the kmitza. So if he does that, there is discussion about even when it comes to a mincha soilus. Shitum Kabetzes talks about that maybe even with a mincha of unbaked flour, maybe after the kmitza he's also supposed to take the remainder of the flour and bake it into 10 chalas. There are different opinions about that. In any case, if he didn't do that, v'loy molach, or if he didn't salt the mincha. So one explanation, the Meforshim on the Mishnah explained, the Bar Tanur, the Tosfos Yom Tov, explained that he only salted the koimetz, not the shiraim of the mincha. But at least the koymets was sorted. But Rabbi Akiva Eger and other achronim say that, wait, we're going to learn in the Gemara in a couple of days that even lachatchila you only have to sort the koymets. So what's the chiddush? The Mishnah is going to list all these things and say if you didn't do these things, then the mincha is still kosher. Well, we're going to learn on that cost. And in fact, you even lachatchila you don't have to sort the rest of the mincha, only the koymets. So he explains that maybe it means that if he didn't that it does have to be sorted. The pasuk says al for kavon chatak v'melach. You have to offer salt with all your korbanos, but it means if a kohen didn't do the salting of the if a kohen didn't salt the korbanos and a zor did instead. So if he didn't v'loy heinif, or if he didn't wave the menachos that require waving, v'loy higish, or he didn't touch it to the southwest corner of the mizbeach, osha posam pikim merubos, or if he did break up the mincha, but he broke it into larger, and he broke it into larger than normal pieces. It's supposed to be, it actually brings from later in the Masechta, it's supposed to be, here we're talking about a mincha where the koyimetz is taken. If it's a minchas koyim, there's no need to do that, because you're anyway not going to take mitzvah from it, but you're anyway going to burn the whole thing on the mizbeach. But a minchas yisrael, what you're supposed to do is take each of those chalas and fold it in four, and then those are your pitim, those are your small pieces. So let's say he didn't, let's say he broke each one into three or two pieces. Or if he didn't anoint them with oil, the ones that are, that have to have oil applied to them afterwards, nevertheless, the mincha is kosher. Tosfos points out that a number of the things we're mentioning over here are out of order. For example, the Mishnah had said he didn't salt it, or he didn't do the tznufa, but in fact, the tznufa, the waving from menachos that require waving, comes before the salting. So they are out of order. The Tiferes Yisrael brings a logical order. It says first we mentioned the pouring of the oil, the mixing, the breaking up into pieces, and the salting. The point is that these things, even in Lachatzchila, a Zor can do them. So they're going according to the order of the Pasuk. Then comes Tznufa and Hagosha, which are not supposed to be done by a Zor, only by the Yevet. If a Zor did them, then they'll be kosher. So then in that case, then Tznufa and Hagosha are in order. So it's true of the various things that the Mishnah is mentioning, they are out of order if you look at the entire process of the mincha. But if you look at first, you have a group of four that can even the chatchila be done by a zur, and then you have two more that should not be done by a zur. But if the evidence kosher, then within each one there's a logical order to it. One goes according to the order of the psukim, and the other one goes according to the order in which the things are actually done. Okay. In any case, all these things, then the mincha is still kosher. So the Gemara asks, "My lo yotza? What do we mean if he didn't pour the oil? Ilay lo yotza tlal? Do you mean that he didn't pour at all? In other words, that he didn't do the last application of oil at all, like we said in the Mishnah, that it would mean, in other words, that he poured in all the oil ahead of time? No. What do you mean? Kuvak sibba. The fact is, the pasuk says that it's ma'akev to do that." Mepharshim discuss how exactly. So Rashi talks about how is it, because it says it by a mincha solus, by a mincha of flour, and then it repeats it by a mincha smachvas, by a fried mincha. And in general, we have a rule, whenever something is repeated, then it's la'akir. So therefore, if it says twice this point about that he has to pour the oil, then that is at the end, then it will mean that it's ma'akir. Also, Rashi says, because the positive is yet factor allow shaman, you should pour oil on it. Mincha hi, it is a mincha, meaning without that pouring, it's not a mincha. So the pouring has to be done, that last pouring has to be done. Ella lo yotzak, so we have to say that when it means he didn't pour, means koyin ella zor. It means a koyin didn't do the pouring, a zor did it. Well, the question is, Yahaki le bolal nami. In that case, are you going to explain the words le bolal, the next words in the Mishnah, that he didn't mix? You're going to say the same thing, le bolal koyin elazar. You're going to say it means if the koyin didn't do the mixing, didn't put in the second application of oil and mix it, but rather a zor did, implying hole bolal klal psula, implying that if it wasn't mixed at all, it will be possible. We learn in a Mishnah later, towards the end of our Masechta, we're going to talk about it like this. We're going to talk about what size mincha could a person bring. Normally, a person brings a mincha of one isarin, but a person could bring a mincha of more esrenes than that. What is the limit? The Mishnah says over there the limit is 60. And one reason, the Gemara gives a couple of reasons, the Mishnah and the Gemara there give a couple of reasons why the limit is 60, but one of them is shishim nivlovim, because a mincha of 60 isarin is going to be able to be mixed, the flour and the oil. Shishim ve'echad, and nivlovim, but 61 would not be able to be mixed. Rashi explains that here we're talking about, in other words, that you have one lug. Now, we're going to have a machlokas later in the Masechta. When a person brings a larger mincha, does it also have more lugim of oil in it? If a person brings a mincha of two esrinim, does it have two lugim of oil? Now, we're talking about over here a private menachas. We're not getting into the minchas v'sachin, the ones that are brought together with animal korbanos. Those have other rules. We're talking about a plain old mincha. So, is it that if he brings a mincha of two esrinim, then it's two lugim of oil, three esrinim, three lugim, and so forth, up to 60 would be 60 esrinim of oil? Or is it, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds over there at that even that no matter how large the mincha, there's always only one lug of oil? So Rashi points out two possibilities. When we say over here that 60 can be mixed, 61 not, that may be according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, because in other words, when you have 60 esrinim of flour and only one lug of oil, it's going to be impossible to mix it in such a way that the flour and the oil are actually blended. Then Rashi says another explanation. Even the Chachamim over there who disagree with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and say that it means that you have 60 isaron of 60 isaron of flour and 60 log of oil. Nevertheless, when it's so large, you're not really going to be able to mix it properly. Okay. In any case. Now, so we're saying, in other words, in effect, we're saying that if it wasn't mixed, then it's going to be possible. Vahavinan ba, and we discussed at the end of our Masechta. Ki einim nivlolun my habi. Who cares if they're not mixed? We say in our Mishnah about tam like balal kira. Doesn't our Mishnah say that if you didn't mix it, it's kosher? So then if it's not active, so what's the problem if you have a mincha that wasn't mixed? Or that can't be mixed is the question. Now Tosfos brings up the question. Okay, so fine, there is a mitzvah to mix it in the first place, and our Mishnah is only saying b'diavad, if you didn't, the korban is kosher. So fine, you could say that the point is you have to bring a mincha that could conceivably be mixed, and therefore you're not allowed to bring one that's larger than that. But Tosfos says that no. If he wants to, if a person is going to donate a mincha larger than 60 isarim, what he has to do is he has to separate it into different kelim. The maximum in any one keli is 60 isarim. If in fact the mixing was not active, then why not? He wants to bring an extra large korban. He wants to bring 61. He wants to bring 70. He wants to bring whatever. Let him put it all in one keli, and who cares if it's not mixed? The fact that we limit him to 60 in one keli, because more than that cannot be mixed in one keli, implies that it's actually ma'akid, but our Mishnah says it's not. The Amar Rav Zeira, so Rav Zeira says, a famous answer that the Gemara uses in many different contexts, kolam roilam bila ein bila ma'akevis. When the mincha is capable of being mixed, then mixing is not ma'akid. So a regular size mincha, up to 60, up to and including 60 isarim, you could mix it, therefore even if you didn't mix it, then it's fine. B'chol she'ena roi l'bila, but if it's not suitable to be mixed, if it's so large that it can't be mixed, bila ma'akevis, then the mixing is ma'akev. And therefore, so now, it has to be able to be mixed, and if it can't, then it is going to be possible. So the rule is not you have to mix it, but the rule is you have to be able to mix it. The Gemara uses this principle in many different contexts, that in many areas of halacha, we say it doesn't matter so much whether something was in practice done. The question is whether it could have been done. One of many examples of it is, for example, as far as chalitza. That by chalitza, there are certain things that have to be said by the yavam and by the yavama. Though to say those things is not ma'akev, as long as she took off the shoe, that's the central part of chalitza. But nevertheless, you have the similar kind of thing. The Gemara says that if either of them are mute, then they can't perform chalitza. Why? Same reason, because it's not roi labila. It's not they're not capable of speaking, and therefore it's possible. If they're capable of speaking, but they just choose not to, then it's still kosher. So in any case, the point is that and Tosfos points out how Rav Zeira knows that exactly. The fact is there's no pasuk that implies that the bolal is ma'akev, and therefore not. And even if it's repeated, Tosfos points out there's no place where it actually says as a commandment you should mix it. You have, for example, the Nesi'im 12 times it says the mincha v'lula v'shemen, but it says it as a description. It was in fact mixed with oil, not necessarily saying that it had to be. And then as far as the part that if it's not ruri, then it is ma'akev, Tosfos says, is a svara. And again, we use it By Halitzan, we use it in a number of other places in Shas. The point of that is, though, anyway, the point is that Bila is not ma'akiv. So why is on? So if our Mishnah is saying if you didn't do Bila, that if you didn't mix, then it's kosher, implying it wasn't done at all, as opposed to the lo yotzak of the first part of the Mishnah seems to be implying that it was done, but it was done by a zor. Because again, if there wasn't yitzika done, then it's possible altogether. So what is it? So the Moses midi iria, what kind of a proof or what kind of a question is that? Hokadisa. Each one has its own rules. The Mishnah is not generalizing between those two things. Lo yotzak means lo yotzak koyin al azor. The word lo yotzak means a koyin didn't do it, but it was done. Azor did it. Lo bala means lo bala klal. Lo bala would mean that he didn't mix it at all, because as Reb Zeira says, that's fine even if he didn't mix it, as long as it's capable of being mixed. Okay? The Mishnah says, Osha posam pitim merubas kshera. The Mishnah had said if he had broken them into the bzeik, those fried mincha, into extra large pieces, then it's kosher. So the Gemara asks, why do we need to say that? Hashtag, like posas klal kshera. If you're telling me he didn't even break it up at all, then it's kosher. Pitim merubas miboya. Would you need to tell us if he did larger pieces? And the answer is, my pitin merubas should riba b'fsisin. On the contrary, pitin merubas does not mean, as we thought, that it means larger than normal pieces. On the contrary, it means more pieces than expected, meaning that he broke it into two small pieces. So nevertheless, the mincha is kosher. Now, Tosfos points out, where Rashi had mentioned in the Mishnah, that with a base to a fried mincha, you break it into four pieces. On the other hand, you have an opinion later on in the Masechta that even with a baked or fried mincha, you crumble it back up into pieces that are the same consistency as the flour they originally came from. Well, that, of course, the point of that, there's no such thing as pitted, there's no such thing as shribub of sisin, there's no such thing as making it too many pieces. That's one answer. The The other answer is pitim merubas can mean actually larger than normal pieces. Now we're the same. You might have thought, awesome, when he didn't break it at all, who did it chalas aleihem? Fine, he didn't break it up into the right size pieces, but at least they're chalas. So he baked them into chalas, baked or fried them into chalas, and they still are intact chalas. So again, he had to have done psissa, as Rashi pointed out on the mission. He had to do a little psissa in order to be able to do kmitza, otherwise it would be impossible. But at least the rest of it is still left as chalas. Aval hocha, but if he breaks it up into extra large pieces, the loy teras chalas ikka, the loy teras psisin ikka, it's neither chalas nor psisin, it's neither chalas nor the right size pieces, maybe it should be possible. Kamash malon, therefore, the Tana has to tell us that nevertheless it's fine. Now let's go back to this matter of yitzika. We said in the Mishnah, lo yotzak, if you didn't pour the oil, means the oil has to be poured. You do need those three applications of oil. However, it's fine b'di'evit if a zur did it. So the Gemara says, Lema Masnissin v'loy k'Rav Shimon. Should we say then that our Mishnah is not like Rav Shimon? And as usual, a stam Mishnah we would like to have go according to all the Tanaim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rav Shimon Omer, Kol Koyen She'enem Moide Ba'avoida. Any Koyen who does not agree to the Avoida. So Rashi explains elsewhere that it means basically that he thinks that Moshe invented the whole concept of Korbanos. Rashi explains this. Gemara is also in the Chulin. Rashi explains over there that it means that basically this Kohen imagines that Moshe made up all the halachas and all the details of the avodah himself. He's a koifer, he's going against one of the Yugim Ikrim, but we would have thought that he gets a portion of the kodshim. But as Reb Shimon is going to go on to say, he does not based on a particular pasuk. The Ritzvah gives a different explanation. He says maybe fine. Hashem, Moshe said them all in Hashem's name, but not all of them are choyva. Some of them we can decide on our own whether we can do or not. Sam Stoker gives another explanation. It means that he says that Hashem didn't say that you have to do them. Hashem says if you want to do them, then do them. Tosfos points out over here that if he's not moed ba'avoda would mean even if he's a tamid chacham, but he's a rosha. The Tosfos compares it, contrasts this with a Gemara in Chulin that says that you're not supposed to get, anyway, you're not supposed to give Makas Kohona to an Amma Oretz. So maybe the difference is, Truma and Maaser, you can give them to any Kohen you want, so therefore don't give them to a Kohen Amma Oretz. See, we're talking about a Korban which is given out to all the Kohenim who are on duty that day. You would think that it should, but no, he has to be Modeb Avoda. He has to be admitted, he has to be agreeing to the validity of the Avoda as the various possibilities that we just explained. In any case, Reb Shimon says, "Ein lechevik b'kohuna." Such a person has no portion in the kohuna. He doesn't get a portion of the korbanos. For Neman, as the pasuk says, "Makriv es dam shlomim v'sachelim b'nei Aaron," the one from the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the shlomim and the chelim, lo siya shreik hayom in the mana, to him the right thigh of the of a shlomim will be given as a gift. So we learn how moida ba'avoda yesh lechedek b'kohuna. Only if he agrees to the validity of the avoda, the bringing of the blood and the chelev, then and the other details of the avoda, yesh lechedek b'kohuna. Only he gets a portion of the korbanos. She'ena moida ba'avoda. But if he doesn't, ein lechedek b'kohuna, he does not have a portion of the kohuna. He's not entitled to a portion of the korbanos. So now continues Reb Shimon. Now, if you only had that pasuk, you would say that it means only the avoidas that are mentioned in that part, only the specific avoida which is mentioned in the pasuk. A makriv as damash shlomim, which means halacha, which means walking it over to the mizbeach. So you would know then that it means if he's not moideim. Another possibility is the Sefer just says that it means the actual avodas, and that pasuk, the sprinkling of the blood and the burning of the chedah. But says Reb Shimon, minayin l'rabbis, how do we know that also if a kohen is not moida, but chamesh esrei avodas, 15 avodas that are unique to the kohen? Hayitzikos, the pouring of the oil for the mincha, vablilus, and the mixing of the oil. Again, as we said in the Mishnah, yitzikos is the third application of oil, and blila is the application of the second one, and then the mixing it. Vapsisos, breaking up the mincha into pieces, like we talked about before. Vamalichos, salting the korban. Vatnufos, waving whichever korbanos require waving. Vahagoshes, touching the mincha to the corner of the mizbeach. Vahakmitzas, taking kmitza. Vahaktores, burning various things on the mizbeach. Vahamalikas, doing the malika of a brewed korban. Vahakabolas, doing kabbalah of the blood. Vahazois, sprinkling the blood. And also Rashi in the relevant Gemara and Chulin also says that it also means when there are korbanos, whether the korbanos of Yom Kippur and the other ones where it has to be sprinkled inside the heichal, then it means those also. So any of those, if he doesn't admit that those are valid, either again he says that Moshe made them up, or he says that Hashem, or he says that some of them are optional, or that Hashem says it, or that all of them are optional, etc. The various possibilities that we brought before, and then we have some things that are outside the. Then we have some things that are not necessarily in the business. Well, then we have some other things that are not part of bringing korbanos. Vashkas soita, also the giving the soita to drink, which has to be done by a kohen. Vaharifas egla, and the decapitation of the egla arufa, where the kohenim have to be present. Vataras mitzora, making a mitzora tahor with the broods and the water from parshas mitzora. Onesias kapayim, and duchening. Bein b'fnim, bein b'chutz. Whether the nesias kapayim, whether the duchening is in the Beis Mikdash or outside of it. Minayin, how do we know that if a kohen doesn't agree to the validity of any of those, then he does not get a portion of the korbanos? And in fact, this isn't an exhaustive list. There are in fact other things as well that could be included. Many times though the Gemara will give a list like that, and even with a number, and still there will be other things that are included as well. Therefore the pasuk says, from the sons of Aaron, from which we learn avoda hamasugal of bnei Aaron, when you have an avoda which is given to that is reserved for the sons of Aaron, for the kohenim, then call kohen shein moedah in the korban, then any kohen who doesn't admit to the validity of it does not have a portion of the korbanos. Tosfos points out, many others. Trumas Hadeshen, setting up the wood pile on the mizbeach, putting the Shnei Gizri Eitzim, taking the ashes off the mizbeach HaPnimi and the menorah, and so on and so forth. So fine, Tosfos says, Tana Rishayer, you could still say that the Tana did not give an exhaustive list. He gave a list, and he gave a number, but in fact, there are other ones as well. Tosfos then says, well, then what is the number coming to be, what is the number coming to be Ramai? It means the shechting, the stripping off the skin of the animal, the cutting it off, those things are not anyway reserved to the sons of Aaron. So if a Kohen thinks those are optional or what have you, then it's not so bad. It has to be that, says Reb Shimon, that he agrees that to the validity of all the avodas that are done specifically by the Kohen. Now, the point is that according to Reb Shimon, it comes out that one of the ones on his list was Yitzhika, was the pouring of the oil on the mincha. So it comes out according to him that if a Zor did that, it would be possible, because he's listing things that have to be done exclusively by Kohen. So then our Mishnah, it seems, not Reb Shimon. Amr of Nachman, but Reb Nachman says, Loi Kasha, that's not a contradiction. Kan the minchas Kohenim, kan the minchas Yisrael. One's talking about the mincha of Kohenim, and the other is talking about the mincha of Yisrael. A Kohen's mincha, the Torah tells us, is completely burnt on the Mizeach. There's no kmitza done with it. Minchas Yisrael, deras kmitza here, minchas Yisrael, where you have to take a kohenitz from it, then the kmitza of the Eilach mitzvah is kohona. And you learn from a pasuk, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that only from kmitza and on must be done by the Kohenim, limit a Yitziko of Leila Shechayim Bezar, from which we learn that the pouring of the third and the second pouring of the oil and the mixing are kosher with the Zohar does them. So therefore, our Mishnah says that it's kosher. But the Braise, Reb Shimon, is talking about Minchas Koyanim. The Lab Basmitzi, your Mincha Koyanim is not, you don't take a Koyanim Smith, the whole thing is burnt on Mizveah. Therefore, you can argue that to begin with, the whole procedure of it requires a Koyan, and therefore that would be what Reb Shimon is saying, that if a Koyan denies the idea that there has to be, that Yitzhika has to be done by a Koyan, or even that it has to be done at all. So we can answer that way, and then we can still say that our Mishnah goes like Reb Shimon. But Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Reb Nachman, Nechdi, let's consider, Minchas Koinim Meheche Shrabi Yitzhika. After all, where do we have in Ribui that the Minchas Koinim requires Yitzhika in the first place? The Minchas Yisrael, we only know it from a Ribui that it says by a regular person Mincha. Where it says, the Pasuk says that you should pour oil on it, minchahi, and later on, in the Masechta, the Gemara explains that when it says minchahi, the word mincha comes to include a mincha of Koyanis. So you should argue, mahasam k'sheda b'zor, afachanami k'sheda b'zor. Well, then a minchas Yisrael, we just established, would be kosher if a zor does the pouring, so it should be the same thing with a minchas Koyanis. What makes you say that there should be a distinction? Ikadamri, or another version of therefore the Rava argues that no, our Mishnah cannot work according to Reb Shimon, because there'd be no reason to make that distinction and say that a Minchas Koyan does have to have the Yitzhika done by a Koyan, but a Minchas Yisrael not. There's no logical basis for that, says Rava. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion, went Amr Rav Nachman like Kasha, can be nikmatis, can be she'en nikmatis. That the Mishnah would be talking about a mincha from which a koimitz is taken, and the Braisa would be talking about a mincha from which the koimitz is not taken. Now that does include the minchas koyanim, but it also, the second version also includes minchas nisrachim. The minchas nisrachim is brought by Yisrael, but the fact is, no koimitz is taken from it, the whole thing is burned on the mizbeach. So once the second version, Rav Nachman says that the on Mishnah is talking about the ones, the Minchas Yisrael, a regular Minchas Yisrael, not a Minchas Nisachim that he brings, but a regular Mincha that Yisrael brings, and a Koimitz is taken from it. Where is the Braisa? And Rav Shimon's statement in the Braisa would refer to any Mincha from which a Koimitz is not taken, whether it's a Mincha of Koyanim, or whether it's a Mincha of Yisrael, but it's a Minchas Nisachim. And again, Amalei Rava, and again, Rava says the same problem. Where do we learn that there has to be the pouring on a mincha that does not have a koimetz taken from it? Ultimately, we learn it from a mincha that does have the koimetz taken, because by a minchas machvas, a mincha that's fried, the pasuk says, the pasuk again, that's where the pasuk says, we have sakta al arsham and mincha hi. That the word mincha includes all menachas. So again, the same thing, kidnik matzis. So therefore, again, a mincha that does not have a koimetz taken has to be like one that where the koimetz is taken, because we're learning it from the same thing. Mahasim yitzik treder bazar, afachanami treder bazar. So just like by a mincha where the koimetz is taken, then it's kosher by a zar, as we just said, because it's only from kmitza and on that it has to be done by a koyin. Afachanami treder bazar, the same thing. Even by a mincha where a koimetz is not taken, nevertheless, it should be kosher if the oil was pulled by a zar. So fine, the Gemara says, So fine, it's clear that our Mishnah cannot be like Reb Shimon. Indeed, it's so not like Reb Nachman says. There is, in fact, no way to make our Mincha work according to his opinion. Now, then we'll continue discussing in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, why indeed? So what is the underlying machloikas between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon about whether you need Yitzika or not, about whether Yitzika has to be done by a Kohen or not? How do they darshan the Pesukim differently to arrive at their respective opinions?